Form can be described as the shape of music. It's probably the most elusive aspect of music for the listener to grasp, especially in the case of the longer works. However, the shorter forms are not at all difficult to comprehend. The shortest unit in which we tend to hear music is the phrase, which is roughly comparable in length to the phrase as we encounter it in speech and in writing. Here's a familiar phrase. Notice that that phrase ends up in the air, so to speak. It needs another phrase to give the music a sense of completeness. Notice that in those two phrases, we have actually what might be considered a complete musical composition, simple as it is. Since it consists of two parts, it's said to be in binary form. But now let's take a song like the familiar Believe Me of All Those Endearing Young Charms and see what its form is. Here's the first line. Notice that it leaves us up in the air. The second line of the song essentially repeats the same melody, but ends with a sense of completeness. In other words, here we have another very small binary form, consisting of the repetition of one melody, with only the ending changed. Now a new melodic idea is added in order to give us a sense of contrast, and once again, at the end of this third line, we're left with a sense of incompleteness. Something else must follow in order to complete the musical form. The fourth line does bring us around to a sense of completeness, but notice that it's actually a repetition of the opening line. To summarize, let's identify the opening melody in line 1 by the letter A. Line 2, despite the fact that it ends slightly differently from line 1, is essentially a repetition of line 1. The third line, since it presents a new melodic idea, can be identified by the letter B. And the fourth line is a repetition of the opening melodic idea, and is therefore A. Thus, the form of this song can be outlined by the symbol A, B, A. So typical is this design that it's become known as the song form. It's the form of such familiar songs as Swanee River, Drink to Me Only with Thine Eyes, and Dvorak's Humoresque. This A, B, A form is considered to be in three parts, since the second line is mainly a repetition of the first. Thus, it's called the ternary form. Many larger compositions are nothing more than expansions of these simple binary and ternary forms. Suppose we were to enlarge all the elements of one of these basic forms, so that the A section consisted not of a single phrase or a single melody, but of a group of melodies. And suppose the same were true of the B section. Here we have the genesis of the larger forms. The binary form was very popular in the 17th and 18th centuries. It was the ground plan of the numerous keyboard sonatas by Domenico Scarlatti, with each section considerably extended. Here's the opening section of one of his sonatas. and then the entire section is repeated. After that, the second section is presented. Second section is repeated. That ends the composition, which would take perhaps 3 or 4 minutes complete. Essentially, it's in binary form. Many of the dance movements of the 18th century suites, the Allemande, Courante, Sarabande, Gigue, Pourée, and Gavotte, among others, are cast in this binary form, A, B, or more correctly, A, A, B, B. The ternary form is the ground plan of almost every minuet to be found in the symphonies of Haydn and Mozart. Here, for example, in the minuet of Mozart's Symphony No. 41, a musical idea is presented. This melody is elaborated upon, and there are repetitions. All this comprises the A section. Then some contrasting music is presented. This melody, too, is expanded and repeated. This is the B section. That's followed by a return to the opening section. Thus we have the ternary form A, B, A. This form also supplies the ground plan for nearly all the scherzo movements of the symphonies of Beethoven, Schubert, and Brahms, among others. It also applies to most of the minuets and scherzos in the quartets, trios, and sonatas by these composers and their colleagues. In addition, many of the slow movements of these works, despite their length, are really enlarged song forms. But now, suppose that a composer has 3 contrasting themes or melodies that he wishes to incorporate into a single movement. Let's assume that one theme is the most arresting, and that he wishes to give it the greatest prominence. He can present it first, and then alternate it with the other 2 themes. The ground plan of such an arrangement would be A, B, A, C, A. Notice that it returns to the A theme after each digression. Well, this is the familiar form known as the rondo. You'll find that the last movements of many concertos are cast in this form. Let me outline for you the shape of the closing movement of Beethoven's violin concerto, so that you might become familiar with the rondo form. In fact, Beethoven uses an expanded rondo here, so that this is a complex version of the form. And it might be helpful to jot down the letters with pencil and paper as they emerge, so that you can see the form taking shape before your eyes. Here's the first theme, which we might designate by the letter A. Here's the second theme, designated by the letter B. Now Beethoven returns to the first melody, the A theme. After he expands on the opening theme, Beethoven now introduces a third melody, which we designate by the letter C. Now, once again, Beethoven returns to the first melody, the A theme. At this point, Beethoven can be said to have completed the rondo form, since we now have the following ground plan: A, B, A, C, A. However, he chooses to extend it by returning to the second melody, the B theme. Now, as a result of Beethoven's having reintroduced that second melody, he has made the shape of this movement an unbalanced one. It's now A, B, A, C, A, B. In order to round out the form, he has to return to the A theme. It's heard first in the cellos and basses on the bottom of the orchestra. And, in fact, Beethoven ends the entire movement with an elaboration of the opening A theme. So, you see, the rondo form incorporates the two basic elements, repetition and contrast. The A theme is repeated several times, and the B and C themes supply contrast. These two elements, repetition and contrast, are at the root of most musical forms. It's just the matter of the ways in which they're organized that determines the differences among the various forms. Of course, the simplest way to create a musical composition is through the use of the principle of repetition. We saw this concept at work in the first two lines of the song, Believe Me, of All Those Endearing Young Charms. Many folk songs are built in this way. Think, for example, of the song Clementine. This is based on sheer repetition. The only variety is in the words of the different verses. Many more serious songs are also built on the idea of repetition of the same music for several verses. Here in Schubert's song, Das Wandern, the original melody and its setting, harmonically, are more interesting than Clementine, but the principle is the same.
Das Wandern ist des Mühles Lust, das Wandern. Das Wandern ist des Mühles Lust, das Wandern. Das muss ein schlechter Mühle sein, denn niemals fiel das Wandern ein. Das Wandern, das Wandern, das Wandern, das Wandern. Vom Wasser haben's wir gelernt, vom Wasser. Vom Wasser haben's wir's gelernt, vom Wasser. Das hat nicht Ruhe bei Tag und Nacht, ich stets auf Wanderschaffe Dach. Das Wasser, das Wasser, das Wasser, das Wasser.
In theory, it should be possible to go to the other extreme and to create a composition whose outstanding characteristic is variety. In other words, the composer might merely tack a series of melodies together, one after another. We do, in fact, have the so-called free forms, those whose very titles declare their independence of any rules. They are the rhapsody and the fantasy. But we find that in practice, even in these free forms, composers still adhere to the concept of repetition and contrast. A long series of unrelated melodies, while it would certainly satisfy our desire for variety, might leave us with a sense of chaos. We still want the balancing effects of variety within unity, or unity in variety. We've been concerned so far with the outward shape or the ground plan of each form. We haven't yet delved into what happened to any one theme. We might say that so far we've been concerned with the shape of the bottle, but not with the taste of the liquid that fills the bottle. But suppose that a composer wanted to develop one or more of his melodies, to explore the possibilities inherent in his melodies. Suppose in the course of that development, whose purpose is to make the music more emotionally compelling, that he even wanted to combine several themes. Well, composers have evolved a form that fits that plan very well. I might tell you right now that it's quite a complex form, perhaps the most complex of all. And yet, you've heard it literally hundreds upon hundreds of times. And what's more, even though you may not have been aware of the form as such, and even though you may not be able to describe it in detail, you've undoubtedly responded emotionally to the music written in that form. The opening movement of almost every symphony and concerto and sonata and chamber work is cast in that form. It's the so-called sonata form, and it too is really a gigantic extension of the three-part form. But in the sonata form, part one consists of the presentation or exposing of all the themes, and it's called the exposition. Part two consists of the developing or the churning up of the themes to create emotional excitement. It's called the development. And part three is the recalling of all the original themes, more or less in their original form. It's called the recapitulation or the restatement. Let's take the entire first movement of Mozart's G minor symphony, his symphony number 40, and see that plan in operation. He begins directly with his first melody, or the first theme. Notice that it contains some repetitions. Music you hear is a bridge from the first theme proper to the second theme. It's this. Now Mozart introduces the second theme. Notice that it differs in character from the first theme, and notice that it too contains some repetition. Presented his first theme, and then some new material that acted as a bridge, and then the second theme, Mozart rounds out his presentation by recalling one of the main characteristics of the first theme, which is the rhythmic figure. In which Mozart rounded out the exposition of his themes is called a coda, which is the Latin word for tale. The composer might build his coda out of new melodic material, or, as Mozart did in this case, he might go back to one of the themes that he had already introduced. Actually, since this is an ending to only a section of a movement rather than to the complete movement, it's called a codetta or a small coda. In any case, the exposition, the presentation of the themes, has now been concluded. At this point, the score indicates that the entire exposition is to be repeated, so that you might become more familiar with the melodies. In other words, if we regard the entire exposition as one gigantic A section in an ABA form, we see that the repetition makes the form AABA, just as it was in the song Believe Me of All Those Endearing Young Charms, but of course enormously expanded. Now comes the B section, the development. Here the composer churns up his themes in order to make his music as exciting and as interesting as possible. This portion of the movement is referred to as the free fantasy, the place where the composer explores his themes. He is at liberty to use all of the melodies that he had introduced in the exposition, or any of them, in any order and to any degree that he likes. It happens that in this symphony, Mozart chose to use as the basis of the development only the first theme. As you listen to this entire development section, notice what drama he forges out of that melody. Out of this melody, with its characteristic rhythmic pattern of two short notes and one long one, Mozart derives this. At this point, there is a sense of resolution, a feeling of a return to things as they were, so to speak, before the drama and excitement were wrung out of the melody. In other words, with this reappearance of the theme, complete in its original form, we've reached the third and final part of the movement. It consists of a repetition of the first part, the exposition, and it's called the recapitulation or the restatement. With this recalling of all of the themes in the same order in which they were presented at the beginning of the movement, in other words, the A section, we have a gigantic AABA form. But since we're dealing with an art which allows room for the composer's imagination, the recapitulation does not have to be a literal one. You recall that in the exposition, after his first theme, Mozart introduced a brief passage that served as a bridge to the second theme. Well, he does the same thing here in the recapitulation, but here he expands on it, making it more exciting and dramatic. I'll point it out when it comes along as we hear the complete recapitulation, and you'll notice that after the second theme, Mozart supplies a coda to the entire movement. Bridge returns, but expanded. ¶¶ second theme returns. To the entire movement based on the first theme.